Hello, theater lovers. It's me, Bryn. Today, we're going to talk about Amy Escobar's Scary Mary and the Nightmares 9, a perfect start to spooky season. But first, what's going on in the digital theater world? As always, check out the Tank's online collection of digital theater. There are multiple pieces you can check out for free whenever you feel the urge. So if you're running out of things to watch on Netflix or Hulu or whatever streaming services you have, this is the perfect solution for you. The Theater Project is producing an immersive digital production of The Interpreter from November 4th to 14th. General admission is $20 and student and educator admission is $10. Get your tickets at thetheaterproject.org. Season 3 of the Dramatists Guild podcast, Talkback, premieres on October 18th. This season is all about collaboration, and I, for one, am excited to listen. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Loud Voices, Silent Streets, a solely digital theater company that I've had the pleasure of working with, is producing two different audio dramas called Utterly Hopeless and Ember Green Bay. Ember Green Bay is a fantasy thriller about a woman who wakes up on a mysterious island with no memory of who she is or how she got there. Utterly Hopeless delves into the dysfunctional lives we lead. That's it. That's the whole summary provided, so it seems quite mysterious. Listen to either, or both, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or the Loud Voices Silent Streets YouTube channel. There aren't many digital theater productions going up lately, ever since Broadway came back, yay, and indicated that live theater is once again safe-ish, at the very least. I'm not complaining, but I do find myself missing the easy accessibility of digital theater. If any of you are creating digital theater pieces, audio dramas, or having Zoom readings that you'd like me to promote, please email or DM the podcast on Instagram. And with that, it's time to dive into the world of Scary Mary and the Nightmares 9 by Amy Escobar. Amy Escobar is a multidisciplinary artist who works primarily as a playwright, performer, and puppeteer in the Pacific Northwest. As a playwright, Amy found the power to create space for herself in her community, as well as the autonomy and creative license she had been craving in her work. Influenced by her training as a puppeteer and her understanding of various facets of theater production, she seeks to create worlds that enthuse fellow artists as much as audiences. Her first evening-length work, Scary Mary and the Nightmares 9, premiered at Annex Theater in 2017, and she earned a Gregory Award nomination for Outstanding New Play. She was the Rain City Project's sponsored playwright for the 2018 National Winter Playwrights Retreat and earned a 2018 Four Culture Art Projects grant in support of When You Wish Upon a Pizza, written in collaboration with the 1448 Projects to provide free summer programming for families. Amy is a professional puppeteer with Thistle Theater, working primarily in tabletop bunraku with experience in rod, hand, and shadow puppetry. Her work has been seen in schools and libraries across the Puget Sound and at the Center for Puppetry Arts in Atlanta. She has worked as a teaching artist and guest lecturer, dedicated to sharing the technical rigor, intricacies, and beauty of the form. She has contributed to over 30 new plays as an actor, director, designer, puppeteer, and devised ensemble member since attending Cornish College of the Arts to study theater with an original works emphasis. Here is a short summary of Scary Mary and the Nightmares 9 from New Play Exchange. When Mary pricks her finger on a needle, a drop of her blood falls down into the darkest caverns of the earth and awakens the ancient Slither. His minions emerge from the depths and reveal that in order to save herself from his gnashing teeth, she must journey through the terrifying Nightmares 9 in an epic fight for her life. Scary Mary and the Nightmares 9 examines a young woman's struggle with depression and suicidal thoughts through the shadowy realm of her imagination, a fantastical world full of horror, humor, friendship, and foes. Trigger warnings for this play and this episode include depression and detailed discussion of suicidal ideation. If either of these things would upset you, please take care of yourself. I'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode that is perhaps more suitable for you. And if you or someone you love is feeling suicidal, please check the show notes where I will be posting links and resources that can help. Stay safe, please. To really understand this play, I think it's important for us to research the symptoms of depression and suicidal ideation, as well as common harmful coping mechanisms. The reason for this is that the 9 nightmares that Mary has to go through, from my analysis at least, are all closely related to things that someone who is depressed and/or suicidal would go through or do in their journey towards getting better. These 9 nightmares give this play its structure. So let's dive in and try to understand them better. The American Psychiatric Association states that depression causes feelings of sadness and/or a loss of interest in activities that you once enjoyed. This simple definition doesn't cover the entire experience a clinically depressed person has, but it is the best way to describe it in a single sentence. The main symptoms of depression are the ones stated there: sadness and loss of interest in things you once enjoyed. Other symptoms that could indicate depression are changes in appetite, changes in sleep habits, loss of energy, difficulty thinking or concentrating, and suicidal ideation. Depression isn't just feeling really sad, it's physical too. The symptoms I just went over can affect the body in a myriad of ways. Changes in appetite can have you have changes in weight. Changes in sleep habits can drastically affect how your body fights off disease and viruses, etc., etc. It's more than grief or bereavement. Those processes are natural, and things such as self-esteem are usually maintained through them. Grief rarely brings feelings of unworthiness or suicidal ideation, which are common with clinical depression. Clinical depression is nearly constant and usually has a large effect on how the person views themselves, which grief usually does not. Grief and depression can definitely happen at the same time, for sure. But I wanted to clarify for anyone who hasn't experienced depression how the two differ from one another. The symptom of depression that serves as the catalyst for this play is suicidal ideation. So let's look at the particulars of that. According to Valley Behavioral Health System, nearly 40,000 people in the U.S. die by suicide each year, which is more than the amount who die by homicide. It's estimated that for every death by suicide, there are 11 other attempts made. So as you can probably tell, suicidal ideation is not exactly uncommon. Here are some common signs of suicidal ideation. Again, if you or a loved one experience this, look in the show notes for a list of reliable resources. People experiencing suicidal ideation may self-harm, give away prized possessions, talk about death and dying frequently, decrease social contact, withdraw from activities they once enjoyed, and increase risky behavior. And those are just the ones that could possibly be seen from the outside by loved ones. The person experiencing the ideation most likely experiences paranoia, hopelessness, intense emotional pain, mood swings, and severe anxiety. When faced with a difficult illness, such as depression, people will do whatever they can to make themselves feel better. Some of these coping mechanisms, such as talking to a friend or a therapist, self-care, such as hygiene and going outside and exercise, are great ways to begin tackling depression and many other mental illnesses. But as a lot of us probably know, we don't always cope in the best ways when we're feeling at our lowest. An article in Everyday Health titled "The Worst Ways to Treat Depression" lays out what I think are some good examples of unhealthy coping mechanisms. The first listed are ones that I think we all could have guessed: alcohol and drug abuse. Alcohol and a host of different drugs are pretty easy to get your hands on, especially if you're above the age of 18, and are unfortunately easy to abuse as well. Comfort food or overeating is another. This one is fully explored in one of the nightmares, actually, turning a healthy coping mechanism, feeding yourself, into a more harmful one. Another one is risky sexual behavior, like going home with someone you've never met before who doesn't give you the best vibes. Shopping is another one that can be destructive. A depressed person may try to feel better using the dopamine rush they get from buying something, which unfortunately does not last long. So they keep going back and keep going back until, oops, my rent payment's gone. The nightmares explore a few others, such as running away from the problem or refusing to admit it exists, and negative self-talk. Each of these nightmares represents something that Mary needs to overcome at the beginning of her journey towards healing. Some of those are coping mechanisms she needs to stop or symptoms that she needs to ask for help in dealing with. We'll go into that more in the discussion section. And now for something a little bit more humorous, our reading portion. This episode, we have one of my few ride or dies back, Heather McConnell. She will be performing a monologue as the librarian. But first, a word from our sponsors. And now, Heather McConnell performing a monologue as the librarian.
Shh. Nightmare number 4 is a quiet kind of menace, and we must be mindful of its tune. Let it wash over you. Cool the blistering heat of the mountain in the gentle lull of the briny low. There we find Mary, our sinking ship. Under the water, heavy and slow, the depths of the sea, eerie fathoms ever folding. Such a quiet kind of falling, and dark, so dark. But for a glimmering here and there. Sweet voices. Are they sweet? Are they even voices? Something calling, surrounding her sinking body. No telling how far. No light from above anymore. Only the silvery swishes and swirls. Only voices. And what's that? A great looming. A whale. Ancient beast of the barnacled plain, it sings its low song. Solemn monster, the others attend it. Such shifting little things, adrift in the wake of the deep blue king. She hears them. They entreat, let go. Let go. Just let go. Just breathe. Her last gasps of breath are collected in jar number 4. Everything goes dark as her body goes limp into the silence ever rolling. They tell her, just let it take you. You could drift away so quietly. And for a moment, she thinks maybe she will. It would be so easy. But something, louder than the siren's song, someone calls out to her, swim, push through, pull yourself from this place. And so, she does.
Thank you so much, Heather, for that amazing performance. If anyone would like to contact Heather with professional inquiries, her contact information will be in the show notes of this episode. This play was really an experience to read. I mean, I wanted to read it for October because, you know, Nightmares 9 sounds kind of spoopy, you know, and it does have this kind of spooky element to it that I think makes it a good Halloween read. But it is obviously, as we learned in the dramaturgy section, a lot more than just a kind of spooky Halloween-y type play. It is so, so much more than that. it's all about mental health and a person's journey through the darkest point in their mental health journey to one that's a little bit lighter, one that's more of acceptance. And I think that's a really important story to tell. It's one that we have begun to see told more in media, I think, in the past 5 years or so, especially in TV and movies, as well as theater. And I really am glad that we are more open to these discussions nowadays than we were when, you know, for instance, when I was a kid, like forever ago, it seems. But even when I was, you know, 10 years ago, when I was 15, things were just, it was just starting to become something we could talk about. And now I'm really thankful that we can have stories like this on our TV screens, on the silver screen, on stage for anyone and everyone to hear. Because like mental health can be really hard to explain. It can be hard to contextualize. It can be hard to describe the experience, especially if you're talking to someone who, by some miracle of the universe, is not mentally ill in any way, shape, or form. And this play takes these mental health issues, these symptoms, these experiences, and gives them a face, a more physical representation that anybody, regardless of experience, can understand, because it's something that is right there in front of them. The perks of this is that it gives us something to like concrete understand and fight against, which a lot of us with mental health, with mental illnesses, etc., it's really hard to do that, because you're fighting against what feels like yourself. You're fighting against something that is unseen and invisible inside of you. And so this play takes those things and puts them outside of the body, kind of like that. This is a therapeutic coping mechanism that I've seen around that therapists have given me, but also people just like on, you know, Reddit and TikTok and Instagram or whatever have thrown around, that I think is pretty good and also relevant to how this play is presented, which is giving your, you know, your anxiety or your intrusive thought voice a name, so that you can more easily separate it from yourself and address it. For me, especially when it comes to like ADHD things, if I'm having a really hard time with executive dysfunction, sometimes it comes down to separating that from myself and treating it like one of my students, like a small child. And that works for me, being like, oh, hey, I see you're upset. Let's see, why might me be upset? Are we hungry? Are we thirsty? Does something hurt? Do we need to take a nap? or if you have anxiety, separating it from yourself and being like, ugh, Brad's telling me that I should kill myself again. LOL. Shut up, Brad. Or, you know, ugh, Brenda over here is telling me that my work presentation is going to suck and I'm going to fail and I'm going to die alone, which I know is not true, Brenda. You need to calm down. So giving it a name and separating it from yourself, I think, can be really useful. And that's kind of what this play at least did for me, was looking at all of these things that Mary is dealing with as entities separate from herself and seeing her fight them. Because in the end, when you're fighting and working against or trying to work with these symptoms, you're not fighting yourself. It feels like you are, but you're not. You're fighting science in a lot of ways. You're fighting brain chemistry. And so I liked that this play makes that more concrete and physicalized, so we can see it and more easily understand it. Oh, and Nell and Mary's relationship. So Nell is Mary's best friend. We see her very first off in the very beginning of the play. She's coming in to pick up Mary for a party, which if you've ever been depressed, you will know that that sounds like the exact opposite of what you want to do when you're depressed. So Nell comes in. She's in her cute little clubbing outfit. I think it's described as like sequined booty shorts and stuff. And Mary is just not feeling it. She's not feeling it at all. She wants to stay in her bed with her cat, Alabaster, who is this cute little white cat that is played by a puppet, sometimes in a man when they're in the nightmare realm. She wants to stay in bed with her cat, her adorable little kitty cat. And Nell is like, okay, that's fine, but have you eaten something? Like, do you want me to get you a cookie? Because I know that, you know, makes you happy. Do you want to get in your pajamas? Do you want me to help you? It's okay that you don't want to go. And I love that. That first off in this play, the first scene we see is that Mary is supported. She has an animal support, her little cat, which, as a lot of us know, pets, whether they are cats, dogs, rabbits, snakes, hedgehogs, I don't know what you guys have. They're really great emotional supports. So she has her little cat, and she also has Nell, who we can tell right off the bat is a great friend. Obviously, for all the reasons I've said already, she's coming in to, you know, try and get her friend out. But when Mary doesn't want to go, Nell doesn't get mad, which I think is a fear for a lot of us people who maybe sometimes get depressed, or if you're like me and you have chronic pain, or you're an introvert, which I also am, you don't always want to go out. And maybe sometimes when someone comes over to pick you up and be like, hey, we're going to go do this thing, you're afraid of them getting mad at you and you feel guilty that you don't want to go or that you can't go. But Nell doesn't do anything to make Mary feel guilty, to exacerbate that feeling. She just says, that's okay. Like, it would be really awesome if you wanted to come out, and I think it might be good for you, but if that's not something you feel up to, that's fine. Let me give you what you need. Let me take care of you and then give you your space. And wow, like, I was just, well, for one, I was like, I'm so happy that this person, that Mary, who's clearly having a hard time, has someone like this to support her. That's great. But also, I think it's just a great example, maybe to people, like I said, who maybe don't have these experiences with mental illness, who have loved ones who do, and maybe aren't sure how to best support them. I think right off the bat, Nell shows you a great way to support your loved ones who might be having a hard time with mental illness. She listens, she attempts to understand, and offers her support, but doesn't force it. And she reminds Mary often that she loves her and is there for her. And Mary appreciates it, even when she can't exactly show it. They have this adorable catchphrase. Well, maybe it's just adorable to me. They say this, I think, 3 times throughout the play. It starts, I'll kill you in your sleep. The other responds with, my serum of death is already coursing through your veins. And then the other responds back, oh, that's what that is. And at first I was just like, oh, haha, witty banter, that's cute. But then it pops up again and I go, oh my gosh, this is something they say to each other. This is something that they have established between each other, which is this really dark, humorous thing, but also just shows the other that they're there for them and that they love them in the most quirky and weird way that I just love, because I feel like I could picture me and my friends saying this sort of thing to each other. So I really loved that element, that without having to really do or say much else, we can see that these two people are connected and they love each other. And Mary doesn't have to thank Nell and vice versa, because they just truly give a crap about each other and they want to see the other succeed. And you know what, man? That's love. That is that's romantic and platonic love, man. Here it's platonic, but like, that's love. And I love to see it. I'm going to go back to the cat for a second, just because I love what this character contributes to the story, and also just because I love cats. But this cat is a fully fledged character in this. His name is Alabaster, and he has to do some hard stuff in this play. He really does. And I love that he's a puppet in the real world, and then in the nightmare world, he is, like, according to actual lines spoken in the play, he is, like, a weirdly sexy dude. I love that. So Alabaster has to help Mary with the 6th of the 9 nightmares, which is probably the hardest, one of the hardest ones, actually, and one of the ones that actually made me really teary-eyed and a little upset, actually, because the 6th nightmare is basically someone that Mary loves killing her, essentially, or like at least injuring her extremely badly. So, yeah, Alabaster has to do this thing that he also doesn't want to do, that is also a nightmare for him. So it's not just like in a lot of the other nightmares where it's just Mary fighting against these kind of creepy ghoulies where we're like, yeah, Mary, go get them. In this one, it's two characters that we love who love each other, and we're forced to watch them hurt each other. And it's just heartbreaking, especially because when the librarian, the narrator sort of character, tells Alabaster that if he wants to help Mary, the best way he can do that is by doing this. Alabaster claims, he's like, oh, that's fine. Yeah. I'd just rather she doesn't die because, you know, I'm accustomed to her. So, you know, I don't want Slither to eat her because, you know, she gives me pretty decent food and pays attention to me. So I think that's fine. Yeah, whatever. But we can tell that this is kind of a facade that a lot of cats put on, that my own cat, you could say, is putting on currently at this moment, where they pretend that they don't like you or that they don't need you. But really, cats are just as loving and adoring as any other pet. And I love that that personality bit was put in and shown. And yeah, legit, this part almost made me like cry because, like I just said, I have a little boy cat. He's not all white. He's all black, though, with a little bit of white. And if you want to make me cry with media, honestly, just put a sweet little cat in it and I will be a mess. that's all you have to do. And maybe that's one of the reasons I loved Alabaster so much. But I think one of the biggest things with it is that it shows that support comes from a bunch of different places. Like, obviously, it comes from the people in our lives, but it can also come from other things like pets. It could also come from good books and, you know, nice weather. It can come from a lot of different places. And I liked that Alabaster kind of showed that. Also, just cats are awesome. I recommend cat ownership. So, basically, what does all this amount to? Well, spoiler alert, the narrator character, our spooky, beloved librarian, was once in Mary's position. She once awoke Slither on purpose or on accident, though it is shown that most people do not, quote unquote, awake the Slither on accident. She shows Mary that she's not alone, that there are people who understand and who have been where you are and have come out alive. Because you see, the librarian is the one who put together this recipe to put the Slither back to sleep, these Nightmares 9, where you gather all these ingredients to make this dust that puts the, quote unquote, the Slither, the suicidal ideation, back to sleep to make it more controllable. So she's been there. And even though this experience is really hard for Mary and at times borderline traumatic, the librarian is doing this because she knows what it's like and she knows what it takes to get out, and she knows Mary can do it. And Mary does make it out. She defeats Slither. She puts him back to sleep, but Slither is not dead. That's an important part to mention. Slither is relegated to a small jar that Mary puts on her bedside. He's not gone, but now he's manageable. He's not in control anymore. Mary is. The last lines of this play, delivered by the librarian, sum up the thematic content of the piece really well, in my opinion. Quote, "And don't, however hard it may be, ever let the Slither bite." Listen, I've been there, folks. And if you're there right now, you're not alone. Our issues aren't set up into 9 distinct sections to defeat, like with Mary, but you can get through it. There is a light at the end. There are people, and maybe little furry people, little furry cats, dogs, etc. There are living things, there are living beings out there who need you and who love you and who want you to be here. And even if you feel like that's not true, well, not to get all sappy here, but I care. So there, you have one person. So do it for me if you do it for no one else. If you feel like you have no one else, nothing else to do it for, do it for this podcaster, tiny little chronically ill podcaster sitting in her pajamas at her desk talking about Blaze. You're going to be okay. Really. I've said it already, but if anybody needs resources, check the show notes. There will be a list of mental health resources for you to use at your own discretion. Like I said, I love you all. Keep going. Thank you all so much for listening. If you'd like to contact the podcast to suggest plays and or guests that you might want to hear about or hear from, email me at theplaymatespodcast@gmail.com or fill out the Google form on our website. You can follow the podcast on Instagram at Playmates Podcast. That's at Playmates Podcast. You can also visit the link tree in the podcast Instagram bio to find our website, playmatespodcast.weebly.com, and to find my professional website, as well as how to support the podcast if you would like to. Also, please take a second to write a good review and rate the podcast 5 stars on iTunes or Apple Podcasts if you can. It means a lot. Also, you know, follow us on Spotify and follow us on I think you can follow on Apple Podcasts too, if you can't tell I'm a Spotify girl. Just give us a follow. Even if you don't listen to every episode as it comes out, it's nice to know that y'all exist. I can't wait to see you all in the next episode, where I will be talking to actor and dramaturg Grace Walker about The Wolves by Sarah Delap. Thanks again for listening. Have a safe and fulfilling week. Bye for now.